Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, my special guest is Carolyn Nettle, who is calling all the way from England into the studio. A little bit about her: following a successful 15-year career in international sales and marketing, her life took a whole new direction when she embarked on a period of intensive self-exploration. This included recovery from a variety of addictions and working in a treatment center for recovering addicts. As a healer, teacher, and writer, Carolyn's discoveries bring together all these disciplines and combine them with her passion for helping others overcome life's obstacles and to move forward. She is a natural empath and a medical intuitive who empowers her clients and provides them with tools to make real positive changes in their own lives and in the lives of those around them. She has written a book called Where's My Man? And has been hosting her own radio show called Spiritual Growth Tools on the Radio, which you can also find on Blog Talk Radio. Her latest project is to raise the money to go and plant 1 million trees in Africa, and this is what she is focusing on predominantly at present. Her website, if you'd like to copy it down, I'll give you a moment to get a pen handy. Her website is www.spiritualgrowthtools.co.uk. Again, www.spiritualgrowthtools.co.uk. And with that said, I'd like to introduce my guest, Carolyn Nettle. How are you today, Carolyn? Carolyn, are you there? Well, we seem to be having technical difficulties. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm showing our guest on the line, but let me just do a little bit of investigation. And in the meantime, what I would like to do is introduce you to my latest book, which is Shades of Gay, written by David Clark.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And Shades of Gay is a story, as the commercial tells you, about a sex addict and alcoholic. However, he does come into recovery. It's a very graphic book. It shows the addiction for what it is. So you need to be prepared to handle explicit sex within the story. But it does reach higher ground. And so that is my latest book that's been released. However, I am coming out with a brand new book that is going to be available in Kindle probably in July. And it is a book on recovery from all addictions. It's called Occam's Razor. That's Occam's Razor. And it's subtitled A Simple Solution to Freedom from All Addictions. It is an alternative to other modes of recovery. It may not be for everyone, but it proposes a three-step program as opposed to a 12-step program. It also is a spiritually based program, and I am trying to get Carolyn on the line here. I'm having a problem with my studio. I don't know if you can hear me, Carolyn. Can you hear me?
I can.
Beautiful. I can. Yes, I don't know what the problem was before. I trust you were able to hear me, but
I could not hear you.
Yes, well, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm especially glad to have you with me. I had no fear that it would work out eventually, but in the meantime, I was able to do a little self-promotion, so that's okay, too. Before we get into the meat of the interview, you have your own radio show. Would you be willing to...
Hello?
Yes. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about your own radio show?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So as you said, it's called Spiritual Growth Tools on the Radio and on Blog Talk Radio. And the reason I started a radio show is because I love to talk. Yeah, absolutely. And over my years of recoveries, I've done so many different courses and met so many amazing people, and there were so many more that I wanted to speak to. So, and not having much confidence in my ability on the radio, when I first started in November, I sent an email out to 35 people thinking, you know, maybe one or two would reply back saying, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And 34 of them said, sure, when would you like me? And I was like, oh, okay.
Wonderful.
But I'm fully booked in November, which is fantastic.
Now, when did you start
so
the
every
show?
Every week we try and do a show which is inspirational, educational. I like to listen to how people have overcome their problems. We talk about, last week we talked about grief. The week before that we were talking about the pain that comes, no, not that we saw that, too, before that we saw the pain that comes from separation. So it's very gritty, you know. I do like to ask my, you know, guests how they've managed to get over the obstacles that they've had to get over in their life and how they help other people.
Wow, that sounds like a wonderful show. I tend to have a similar focus. My show is also inspirational, and it's on Spiritually Raw Broadcasting. Is that where your show appears?
It appears on Blog Talk Radio. Sorry, I didn't quite catch the question.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I'm on Blog Talk Radio, but I am also listed on a network called Spiritually Raw Broadcasting and FreeSpiritBroadcasting.com. And I will talk to you afterwards. If you can call me back, I will send you a phone number, because I would like to invite you to come on to Free Spirit Broadcasting. It will give you additional exposure.
That'd be amazing. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Now, you mentioned that you're a recovering person. I know that not everybody is willing to disclose all of their recovery issues, but I wondered if you'd be willing to share what your recovery is about, and then I want to back up and kind of take a look at your spiritual journey from an early age.
I'd be happy to share with you. So how do I share this? Okay, so 7 years ago, so I'm now 7 years sober, I'll say it like that. Let's start a different way. So from a very, very early age, I was never able to be happy. I was very able to make you happy and to make other people happy, but I would say it was really black inside me. I couldn't find joy at all. And what happened was, around about the age of 11 or 12, I picked up alcohol. I found alcohol, and it kind of made everything a little bit better. And I wasn't an alcoholic from the get-go, but it didn't take me long because I have a really addictive personality. And I always laugh and joke and say, I do not know how I didn't pick up drugs. If I had picked up drugs, I definitely wouldn't be here talking to you now. It would have killed me because I'm so addictive. But I just, all the way through my life, I've always just said no. It's incredible. Anyway, so the alcoholism kicked in early teens, I would say. And I was what I would call a really high-functioning alcoholic. I held down a job, as I said. It's ironic that I got a job where my job was really to get all my customers drunk, you know, and party hard. And it was mainly men in my company. They really weren't in, and so, of course, I was expected that I went out and got drunk, and as an alcoholic, obviously, that's exactly what you want to do. So for 17 years, I was very good at my job, shall we say it like that. But I was getting sicker and sicker and didn't, but it was more of a malaise than an actual illness. I mean, I was smoking a lot as well, so I did get lots of coughs and everything, but I just was so desperately miserable. On the outside, everybody was like, wow, she's got an amazing job, she's got a beautiful house, she's got lots of friends, she's always going abroad. On the inside, it was just horrible. I mean, and I really don't know that I knew that it was horrible. I just, something was wrong. So I gave all that up, and I've always traveled. I love my passport. I'm probably to my passport too, and I like to go and watch wildlife and, you know, look at glaciers and volcanoes and, you know, basically where there's no people. I worked out when I got sober. But anyway, so I've done some really amazing things in my life when I was drinking and when I was really miserable. Mm-hmm. But I started a lot of, you know, these self-help weekends, and I just was so angry all the time because I could see all these people getting it, and I never got it. I just was like, well, I can't do that, and that won't work for me, and I don't trust anybody. And, you know, I had massive hatred for myself and everybody on the planet, I think. And then one thing led to another, and I got onto this course, which was two people who really, really did change my life, and it was called the Sattvic course, and Sattvic means balance, and I didn't have a clue when I started it that it was going to make any difference, but it was one weekend a month. So in January I started, and in March I was in rehab. So, you know, it was as a direct result. Yeah, it's pretty impressive, but the thing is, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know that, and it, you know, I had all these addictions, and I didn't know I was going to rehab, but somebody suggested I should get some help for my childhood issues, and I looked at the prices in the UK, and they were like about 10 times as much as they were in the US, and this one place in the US, I hope it's okay to mention it, is called the Bridge to Recovery in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And, you know, it was 10 times cheaper, and I like getting on planes. So, of course, it was a no-brainer. So I jump on a plane, and I do remember it was hysterical. So I land in the – of course, I drank on the plane because I was an alcoholic. And I get to the hotel, and I thought, oh, I'll have a shower and everything because I've just been on a long flight, and then I'll go down to the bar. And I got down to the bar, and it's in – I think I landed in Tennessee or Kentucky. Anyway, he said, oh, we don't serve alcohol after 9 o'clock at night. You what?
Oh, no.
Imagine saying that to an alcoholic. Yeah, I was just like, what? Okay, well, look, I've just been flight, you know what I mean? I'll just get up in the morning, and then I get to the place, and they say, okay, well, you know, we're a treatment center for addictions, and the word they wrote on the board was codependency, and I'm like, well, I'm not a codependent, because I didn't know what it meant. Of course I didn't. Nobody really does until they've learned about codependency. But anyway, within a few days, they told me I was an alcoholic, I was a food addict, I was addicted to rescuing people, I was a people pleaser. You know, I just had this long list of labels. You know, I hear so many people saying, oh, I don't want to be labeled. But you know what? For me, it was just the biggest relief of my life. I was like, oh, my God, I understand who I am now. I'm just out now a pure addict. And you know the old adage, you find out why you were drinking when you stop drinking. So, of course, that led to, I'd say, 3 years of pretty full-on therapy.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of the different addictions and the pain from the childhood, which, you know, I won't talk about too much. Suffice to say, it was pretty awful. Okay, we'll leave it at that. We don't need to go on about that. But, yeah, and then so for the first 3 to 4 years of my recovery, I didn't dare go anywhere near anyone that was drinking or a situation I'd been in because I was just so scared. Because the thing is, what I've worked out since I've stopped drinking is alcohol was the way that I found to cope with reality. I couldn't imagine, you know, when I was drinking, I didn't know this, but now I look back and I think I couldn't cope with real life. I didn't know how to do it. So I just kept, you know, I just topped myself up all the time. So I was just permanently pissed. We say pissed for drunk. Sorry, I mean.
But, we say it for different reasons over here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the thing is, I think, you know, the 7 years has just been a long journey on the road to self-discovery and learning that I am a decent person and that I am worth loving and that I have worth and that you want to listen to me. You know, the irony is I'm on a radio show. When before I started, you know, stopped drinking, I didn't know that anybody wanted to listen to me. And I think that made me really annoying because I talked all the time. And I've had to learn, you know, loads of lessons about, you know, it's okay if I have an opinion and I'm allowed to say what I think. And, you know, really, it'd be nice if you listen to me and I'll listen to you. And, you know, all these things that I just didn't have the tools to cope with just normal communication, normal intimacy, normal relationships, because I didn't get any of that early on. So I didn't have any role models, as it were.
Well,
so that's a very long way of saying, I think, you know, and I think my life lesson is to learn to love myself, and I think it's going to take me the rest of my life. But I truly like myself today in a way that I have never done before. So that is, you know, and I'm not perfect by any stroke of the imagination, but I can stand my company, and I can see in the people around me that love me, I see that they do love me, which was, again, something I could never feel or witness before. So it's just been such a blessing. And, you know, I'm so grateful to the wonderful people that just held me whilst I was screaming and yelling and crying and being really angry and confused. And you know what it's like in the beginning. It's just so baffling.
I do. For my regular listeners, they know my history, and I'm just going to briefly put it out there. For those of you who don't know, I am in recovery for alcohol and drug abuse, as well as sexual addiction and love addiction. And I am a cigarette addict who is letting go of that habit. I've kidded myself thinking I can have just one, and the next thing you know, 2 days later, I'm a pack-a-day smoker again. So I am a very addictive person also. But what I wanted to encourage you, Carolyn, you made what I would call a disaffirming statement when you said that it's going to take you the rest of your lifetime to love yourself. Now, I've been in recovery for 26 years, and I learned a lesson a long time ago that I do love myself, and I use affirmation, and I'm sure that that's a tool that you've been introduced to and use in your life. But I claim qualities I wish to possess as if I possess them now, and one of them is love. And I believe that when we project something onto the future saying that I won't be able to love myself until the end of my life, that we're limiting ourselves and also placing a limit on God. So I encourage just practice saying I love myself today and look in the mirror. This is a great exercise that's been given to me. Look in the mirror without judgment and pretend you're looking into the eyes of yourself as a young child and just transfer into those eyes all the love that you can. See if you can do that, and see if you can do it for 5 minutes. It's a challenge.
Well, I can guarantee I'd need some tissues for that. But I have a similar thing which I do, and one of the things they said to me was, you talk so dreadfully to yourself. You know, you're really cruel and nasty, which, of course, was what my parents were like, and they said, okay, so imagine you as a seven-year-old sitting on your knee, and imagine how you would talk to that seven-year-old. Would you be that mean? And of course, nobody would knowingly, you know, be offensive and cruel to a child. So that's how I started with learning, and I did a lot of inner child work, and she just wouldn't talk to me. long time. She was just like, no, I hate you. You've really let me down. So, you know, that took a lot of work, and, you know, it's an ongoing thing, but I like what you said, but I just look at how far I've come in 7 years, and I'm a baby in recovery. Like you said, you've got 26 years, and I know how far I've come, like how much my life has transformed in just 7 years. So I just keep thinking, well, give me another 7 years, and I'll be, you know, double again, and then... So,
that's right.
Well, anyway.
And it becomes exponential.
Exactly.
You will grow at a faster rate with each additional year. So you should be a teenager very soon. And you'll be an adult by the time you're a teenager. So, again, just accept that your growth is going to be exponential, and it will be. Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. I just, you know, how I am always so amazed at how people like me cope and learn to survive, you know, and I think that's the word that I've heard the most in my recovery is, like, you're a survivor, and how in doing that we switch off the love and we switch off the help, and we're unable to ask for help, and we get really self-reliant and I was so anti-God. It's hysterical to me that now I work with angels and God all the time, but I just didn't trust anyone. And and I love to work with people who I can see a little bit of me in, you know, and I can help them unpick that horrible armor that we have when, you know, we're not given what we need at the beginning and stuff. So, you know, and my belief spiritually is that, you know, we've all come here to learn to love ourselves. You know, yours might look like you need to learn patience. Mine might be I need to learn compassion. You know, the next man might be they need to learn not to murder people. You know, we don't know what it is, but it's all an expression of learning to love ourselves and the one that we come from, you know. And so I think that's what I meant was, I'm down here, I'm definitely aware that my journey this lifetime is to fully appreciate my strength, my power, my, you know, my being.
Right.
Instead of throwing it away as I did for so many years. But, and I just find working with other people so wonderful. It's so rewarding to help people, you know, just to stop hating themselves. That's the one thing I love to do the most. It's just
well,
so
let's
rewarding.
Back up a little bit. Let's back up a little bit to get a little bit more of a sense of what has shaped Carolyn at an emotional and spiritual level. And I just wanted to make one comment to you, and I thought you made a very self-loving comment when you said that you loved to work with people that reminded you of you. Now, if that isn't self-affirming, I don't know what is. So, now you mentioned that there was some trauma in your background. Would you feel comfortable just briefly sharing that? And then I want to get into your spiritual journey.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm happy to share it. I have worked hard, so hard on it now, it's just a story. You know, it is quite shocking, so I don't want to upset anyone who's eating their tea. Oh, no, you're at lunchtime now, aren't you? Basically, my mother didn't touch me for 9 months when I was born because I wasn't the little boy that she'd lost the pregnancy before. So my whole pregnancy with my mother was brief, the boy that she lost. And my father did what fathers do when left, yeah, whatever. There was some sexual abuse from my father, quite a lot. And then my mom never really got over the fact that I wasn't a replacement child, so rejected me on every single level. You know, there was violence, and there, you know, there's lots of other bits, but the thing that broke my spirit, I think I'll say it like that, was the complete rejection. And, yeah, that makes me emotional. So I worked out really quickly how to please everybody else's parents so that they would think I was cute and feed me and, you know, like having me around. You know, that I was a real charmer, should we say that, because I just wasn't getting any attention at all. And when you're an addict, that's not a brilliant characteristic because, you know, when you're charming and you're used to getting what you want, you then want a little bit more and a little bit more. Well, this is me as an addict. Anyway, so it was always like, and I had no fear. I mean, I had lots of fear, but I didn't, like, I was always just, oh, don't worry, it'll be fine. Let's just do this, and getting into heaps of trouble. But, yeah, the point is, you know, when I stopped drinking, I didn't know any of this. I wasn't aware at all of any of this because I'd blocked it off. And I have no memory whatsoever from 0 to 10. So that'll tell you a little bit about how traumatic it was. But now my spiritual belief, I'm kind of skipping ahead to your question, is that I chose my parents so that...
Yes.
And I believe that they did what they did to me out of love, even though it was horrendous. Because my lesson this lifetime is to learn that I'm okay. So what they did was set me up with a childhood that told me exactly the opposite. Nothing about me was okay. I was rejected on every level in every way possible. And it's been a lifetime of learning that, you know, that God loves me anyway and that I'm not particularly church, God, religious, that kind of God. I'm just more talking about the divine, the one, whatever. But and, you know, and when I started working with the angels, one of them said to me, well, can't you see all the times that we saved your life as a child? And I'm like, you know what? I think I've always known that there was something worth living for and somebody... I didn't trust anyone, but I'm here still, and so many other people aren't and wouldn't have survived, you know? So I just keep thinking there must have been someone on my side. And also, you know, my parents did the best they could, and it was awful, but they didn't have anything else to give. And I really do believe now that I chose them to do that because this lifetime I had to learn.
I think it's so important for anyone, if they are going to grow and mature, to cast off this mentality of being a victim. Because when you blame other people for your current circumstances, there can be no growth. And I like the statement that you made that your parents did the best they could, because everybody does. And I think that's something, an important message to deliver to addicts who would beat themselves up over things that they've done that they've regretted. Regrets serve no purpose. And if you can say, I did the best I could, you were coping. You used your addictions to make you feel better. You used them to block out things that you could not deal with. And your parents did the best they could, and they loved you in their own way the best they could. They just had whatever baggage they had, and they were survivors too. And we're all survivors, but the trick is to change from being a survivor into a thriver. And that is where we can blossom. And so I just wanted to pick up on that thread. And let's talk a little bit about God. What were your early concepts of God?
Well, if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is just address a point you've made there, and that's the mentality of being a victim. And
sure.
I didn't know this, but okay, so my mother is the sort of person that everybody tiptoed around, and you know, my dad's favorite line was, oh, don't upset your mother, you know, and we all did everything, so she was a class victim. My dad was one of these guys that said, oh, you know, I've been a dreadful father, and you know, dad, and of course I agreed with him for quite a while, but you know, he was a very funny, but you know, he put himself down so badly, a very, very intelligent man who had no self-worth whatsoever. So I was brought up by two victims. Imagine what my relationships were like. I look back now and think, God, I'm so embarrassed. I was appalling. I didn't know how to get attention other than playing queen victim, and I was so good at it. And I would get loads of attention from people for being, you know, and the funny thing to me is I didn't know any of my problems that I do know now, you know, through working through the layers and finding out. But I was just the queen of being a victim, and that is a really hard mentality to break. But when I catch myself doing it now, I'm like, oh, there you go again. Don't be so silly. There's nothing wrong with your life. Look, you're still alive. You've got lots of things to be grateful for. And but wow, that was a really tough one. And then when they told me, look, you're addicted to being a martyr, I was really angry. How dare you? Because nobody wants to be a martyr, but wow, I really did. Yeah, that was something that I really had to learn not to be anymore, and it was challenging. So talking about God, well, like I say, I'm English, so I was brought up Church of England. We went to church every Sunday. And if we didn't go to church, we didn't get our Sunday lunch. So I used to go and teach the Sunday school children. I'm embarrassed to say this on the radio, but hopefully no one in England is listening. and I used to find out what the lesson was for that day, and I would then teach the children to swear. Dreadful, I'm really embarrassed. But anyway, or I'd be kissing the choir boys, or, you know, I've never really been comfortable with the idea of being told what to believe. That's something very strong about me. And so then I think I sort of became a semi-atheist, but not really. And then I just really hated God for letting me down and, you know, poor me, and God doesn't even love me, and, you know, all of that stuff. And then I got into the 12 steps, and I was like, well, I don't believe in God, and this is never going to work for me. You know, I'm sure anyone who's been in a 12-step meeting knows that's very, very typical. But then I started working with the angels, and that totally transformed my life. Like I said, one of them, Archangel Uriel, said to me, look, I've been with you all your life, and I've literally saved your life this many times. And he showed me the times that he'd done it, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And suddenly there's someone, like I said, who was on my side, who I couldn't understand a reason that they would want to hurt me. I went to Hawaii because I was working in Kentucky in the Bridge to Recovery, and I went to Hawaii to do the Doreen Virtue workshop. And if I'm really honest, I wanted to go and see the dolphins and the whales in Hawaii. And I wasn't really that bothered about doing the angel work, but when I got there, it was just the most powerful week of my life. I mean, just in so, so many ways, I've made some amazing friends. I learned to love myself in a way, because here's my personality. You'll understand this, you're an addict. So everyone's talking about this Pele on the Big Island. And everyone says, you know, she's this really powerful deity. She, you know, don't ask her for anything unless you really, really mean it. And definitely don't take your shoes off and stand on the volcano. So I raced up there, took my shoes off, stood on the, you know, the black volcanic rock. And I said, right, I'm so sick of this thing that's holding me back. I know I can, because I've always been really psychic, so I know I can do this, but I just don't believe in myself. Whatever it is that is holding me back, I want it gone by the end of the week. I had the worst week of my life. I cried. I had never cried. I could feel, you know, daggers leaving my back. I had, like, these hooks in from my sister. It was brilliant and painful and horrible. And by the end of it, I was like, yeah, I can do this. It was incredible.
Isn't it amazing how pain can transform?
And also I was on Hawaii, you know, so it's super sexy and special. I don't mean sexy, but it's super special and magical and,
yes,
you know, it's just a wonderful place. So I did that. And then one other time I shouted at God. Shall I tell you about that? That was funny.
Well,
I'm never doing it again.
I would like to hear a little bit about your healing, but I have a couple of questions for you that you had provided that I think would be really important to ask. And one of them is, what has been your biggest lesson, and what are the other major changes that have taken place in your life, if you haven't already addressed those?
So the biggest change in my life is, I'm going to take you back to this Sattvic course that I was doing. It was all women. It was deeply profound. And because I'd gone to rehab, I sort of went back the year after and started it again. And I think for me, I'd always not trusted women because of my mother, obviously. And if I had friends that were women, I kept them way over there, you know. They never got close. And I just distrusted them intensely, and men. So, you know, being me was fun. But in this course, you know, two of the people from the course are now my best friends, and I was truly held in a way that I don't think I can put into words. And sometimes they were holding me whilst I was bawling my eyes out and, you know, telling them my story and, you know, and just, it was just incredible. And by the end of, I did it for 2.5 years, I think. By the end of it, I just knew what it felt like to be loved by women and to love women. You know, and I'm not talking in any way sexual, I'm talking about friendship, but to have bosom buddies that completely loved me regardless of what I said or did or had happened to me was just the biggest gift I've ever experienced, I think. And gone from strength to strength. And I think if anyone out there is identifying with my story and finds trusting other people really difficult, I'd love to say to you, you know, one of the things I'd learned as a child was do not be vulnerable, you know, because that will kill you. One of the things I had to let go of as an adult is, you know, in your vulnerability where you are so strong and beautiful and you're starting to allow the world in a way that's deep and meaningful. And I just would encourage you to find a support group or a, you know, group of friends even, and just start being brutally honest with them, you know, because I think that's by having that level of honesty and integrity, I think that's when you start to actually say, here I am.
I think that's so important. I think that we need to make ourselves vulnerable, but I think we need to take great care. I've been told by my sponsor that the most important thing to do in recovery is to take care of yourself. And so in the context of being vulnerable, it's important to surround yourself with people who you feel safe with. And if you're like me, in my past, I didn't know who to trust. And I would sometimes share inappropriately with people who would hurt me. And so, you know, it takes some self-knowledge and it takes some time before one begins to know who is safe. But when you do, to be honest, like Carolyn is saying, is so important, and to make yourself vulnerable, that's where real change can occur. Wouldn't you agree?
And, yeah, and I would say, you know, I was thinking, did I get lucky on this Sattvic course? And I was thinking, well, actually, no, I'd done so much. You know, they put me into therapy when I was 11, for goodness sake. I've been talking about me and my problems for, well, I'm nearly 50, so you can imagine quite a long time. But this is something I'll tell you a little secret about me, and that is that I don't know how to make decisions for myself at all, and I never have been able to. So what I do is I take a coin, and we have in England heads and tails, so whatever your equivalent is, okay? So if I want, so it's the choice is A or B. So if I really want A, but I don't know whether B is good for me, I ask the angels now, I say, right, give me the right answer. If it's heads and that means A, and I go, oh, then I know, I can't trick myself with this because I know that I don't want the A and I want the B. If it's if it's A and it should be A, I'm like, oh, great. So I've done that since, I can't even remember when I started it, but, yeah, if you ever ask me a question, I really don't know what's good for me, I flick a coin.
Well,
sometimes, but,
you know what I do is I've discovered that most of what I used to think that I knew is wrong, that the laws of man run counter to spiritual laws, and so I've had to retrain myself. And in essence, what I've had to do is go to the opposite side of the coin, if you will, to come up with the solution, because I always stayed stuck on the problem.
I'm so agreeing with you on that one. And one of the exercises they had me do is think about what you think. Like, we all think that we're just going along and we have these thoughts. And, you know, the word should is absolutely banned in my household. I can't bear that word. But, you know, if you write down all men, dot, 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 and you write down everything that you think all men should do, right, and all women should, whatever they should do, and politicians should, and church leaders should, whatever you write, and then do exactly the same, but think about it through your parents' eyes. What do they think? And if your lists are exactly the same as your parents, I would hazard a guess that you're not thinking for yourself, that you've taken their belief system hook, line, and sinker. And to be honest, that's a really natural thing to do, because, you know, for quite a while they're your safety and your security. So, of course, you want to, you know, believe in the same things as they do because it's tribal and that's what we need to do. But by the time you get to sort of 20, 30, 40, if you're still living your parents' beliefs, then there's a very good chance that you're not doing what you said you'd come to do, you know, or you're not following your path, or you're not happy.
Right.
You know, there's the other thing.
Right.
Happy because you're living somebody else's life. And that, for me, was really eye-opening because I completely disagreed with everything I believe. Completely disagreed with rule-keeping. I'm a free spirit. It's the year of the horse, and I'm a fire horse, you know? And to me, that's freedom and running wild. And, you know, and here I was living this life, cooped up in a small box, and it's not really, you know what I mean, following all the rules and regulations, and I was dying inside because it wasn't who I am. Do you see what I mean?
We are
so
the only ones
all
that,
my beliefs.
Right, and we are the ones that make up these rules that bind us, and I just wanted to let you know we had a caller, and if that caller wants to speak to Carolyn, please call back. I noticed that you hung up. Perhaps because you were on hold and I don't have a producer that can speak to you. But, Carolyn, would you be open to taking a call if we get that call back?
Sure. I don't promise I can say anything intelligent, but I'd be happy to chat.
Okay. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the work that you do, because we only have 15 minutes left. This hour is going so quickly, and I think that I'm going to need to have you come back on the show because there's so much ground I'd like to cover with you, if you'd be willing to do that. But
I'd be honored. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You identify yourself as a healer, and I trust that, like me, I had been a social worker for years. I'm also an empath and an intuitive. I don't do direct healings with people other than those that come to me, that are drawn to me. But I understand that your healing, that you have a website, which we've mentioned. And I trust that because of your background that you're a wounded healer, and I believe wounded healers make the best healers because they share similar challenges to their clients and can relate to them and have developed incredible compassion and empathy for what other people's challenges might be. And I use the word challenge instead of struggle because I think that when I'm in a struggle, I am locked in a place where I'm not going to succeed. But if it's a challenge, if I reframe it as a challenge, it's something that I can overcome. So what has led you to become a healer, and what kind of healing work do you do?
I practice a modality called body talk. And I'm going to say straight away, I practice body talk, but I don't use it that much. But it's the framework within which I do my healing. I found out, having developed my psychic abilities and working with the angels and all sorts of things, I'm what's called a medical intuitive. So what that means is I can go into your energy field and just find out where the blockages are that are stopping you from being happy, healthy, in harmony, or keeping you from being the person you are. So most of the work I do is emotional, that's true, but I do have some very physical clients too. So I don't need you to come to my house. I have lots of clients all over the world. And I basically just tune into your energy and ask the part of you that knows how to heal, so the part that mends cuts and bruises when you hurt yourself, the part that regulates your hormones, makes you eat when you're hungry, the inner wisdom within you. And I just ask it what it needs to do in order to remove some of the blocks that you have to health and happiness. And this wasn't planned at all, but next Tuesday on my show, if you pre-register on the link that is on the show, or you find me on Facebook and friend me, there's a link on there too. We're going to do a live body talk session to show you. We're going to talk about it a little bit, and then we're going to do a live session on everybody who's registered. So anyone who's listening now, you're very free to, it's completely free. Just go and sign up, and then we'll include you in the healing. So it'll be a group session, but you'll just get a taste of body talk. And if you want to find out about what my clients say about my healing, then go to the website and look up body talk. But in answer to what you said about the wounded healer, because I've experienced so much pain in my life, I can sit with anybody and their pain, and it just doesn't affect me. Of course, it affects me because I'm human, but I can just sit and listen to their story, and it might be, something that's really painful to me might not be painful to you at all. You might laugh and make a joke about it. So it's about just really understanding people and what makes them sad, happy, angry, whatever, and having that real connection with their pain. And I think that's what makes me and many, many other people like me. I'm not that special, but it makes us better able to help people because we are so tuned into what is going on for them.
Great. Well, thank you. That really has been helpful to me, and hopefully any of my listeners that are interested will check out Carolyn's website. Would you, for those that may not have been listening at the beginning, would you tell us what the website is once again?
Okay, absolutely. So the website is www.spiritualgrowthtools.co.uk. But it might be easier if you find me on Facebook. So my page is Spiritual Growth Tools. And there's a link on the Facebook page. So if you like the page, you'll be able to, sign up and join the event if you'd like to. If you don't want to be part of it, but you'd still like to hear my show and find out a bit more about body talk, by all means, tune in. It's 7 p.m. BST. So it is now 9:20. So what time is it with you now?
Right now it is 4:19 EST. EDT, we are on daylight savings time here.
It will be 2 p.m. EDT next Tuesday is the time of my show.
Wonderful.
On Blog Talk Radios, and it's called Spiritual Growth Tools on the Radio. So, yes.
What is the most remarkable healing you've done? Are you able to single one out or just pick one?
Yeah, okay. So I had a really good friend of mine from the fellowship who thought everything I did was complete woo-woo and wouldn't go near me, you know, because he was just like, you're a witch and that's crazy. Because it's a little bit out of the ordinary. And one day he rang me and he said, Caroline, I've completely twisted my knee around. I can't put my knee on the floor. I've got to go for this long walk tomorrow. I'm doing this charity event. Can you just try? I said, okay. And I did this link that was the shortest link I've ever, ever done. I mean, I just was like, oh, God, it's not going to work. And he said he got up in the morning and his knee was absolutely fine. And he was not as shocked as I was because I really didn't feel like I'd done anything. But, of course, he had this rage at his father. So I'm sure he won't be famous. He had rage at his father. He'd been thinking about his father when he fell. And I shifted the rage, and the knee had no reason to be ill anymore. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many. It's really difficult to say, but that was one of the most dramatic ones that I've seen.
Great. I have another woman who is a healer who had a remarkable experience. She had cancer, and a doctor came into her room who she later discovered didn't even exist, so she believes he was an angel. And he told
wow.
her, you have anger at your mother. You need to think of three good qualities that she possessed, and you need to do it now. So she named those qualities, and the next day they ran a test on her, and her cancer was gone.
Absolutely. It's amazing what emotions do to us. We think they're going to kill us. But actually, you know, well, you maybe you found this out. I definitely found this out. When I faced the emotions that I was drinking to not feel, I was fine. You know, there was tears, there was a bit of rage, but it didn't kill me like I'd, you know, obviously thought it would have as a child. And, yeah, we're just so unfluent in emotions in our society, and I don't understand why. But one person
yes.
at a time trying to make a difference.
That's right. We all can make a difference, not just in our own lives. We can impact the consciousness of the world as a whole because there are 7 degrees of separation that can translate geometrically, exponentially. We touch another person, they touch so many other people, and so on and so forth until it's spread all over the world. So everybody, wake up and realize you can make a difference in other people's lives and you can affect the whole world. How do you help transform people's lives, Carolyn?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, I think quite often just by doing this, by telling my story and saying, look, I've survived and you can too, you know,
yep.
and I've changed dramatically and drastically from self-hatred and, you know, complete depression, suicidal tendencies to, I want to live today. I want to share this, you know, this gift that I've been given, and I want to help people to want to live too. And how do I transfer? I that's such a hard question to answer. I don't know. I hope by inspiring people to want to be better. I hope by, you know, showing them that there can be a different way. And I think one of the best ways I can answer that question is I believe if I heal myself, I'm healing the world. And I think
yes.
that's pretty much what you just said. So if I work on self-hatred, then I'm alleviating some hatred somewhere in the planet. And that sounds really arrogant to people who don't think like this, but it makes perfect sense to me now that I've got to that point, as it were.
Now, your passion is the Planting Trees Project. Could you tell us a little bit about that? We have 5 minutes left, and I trust that you want to talk about that a bit.
I would love to. Thank you for the opportunity. So,
sure.
Like I said, I'm a fire horse, and this year it turned into the fire horse on January the 30th, and I was being angry at the way that we're treating the planet, and I heard this voice in my head that said, well, what are you going to do about it then? So I literally took it seriously, and I spent 3 days just thinking, well, what do I want to do? And the answer came back, planting trees. Now, up until this point, I hope I've sounded like I know what I'm talking about. Now I'm going to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, and I really don't. I've never planted a forest before. I've never raised £500,000 before. I've never lived in Africa. But I just know that this is what I was supposed to do. So at the age of nearly 50, I'm going to raise £500,000 and go and plant a forest so I can leave a legacy. And if you plant in Africa, it's more effective than planting it anywhere else because it's in the tropics, so it helps climate change, and I really believe that we need to do something. I also, it's interesting to me how I'm really tapping into that human desire to plant trees, to look after the planet. And I think the spiritual journey, it feels like I'm culminating a lot of the stuff I've been doing on myself, because as I learn to love myself, then I love the planet and the people on the planet. And yeah, I'm really saddened by how we're just guzzling gas in our cars and not really caring about the environment. So instead of being angry about it and playing the victim, this is how I see it, that I just want to go and do something. So I'm going to be setting up a massive fundraising campaign. All of this is also on Facebook. So if you go to facebook.com/treeplantingholidays, I'd love some love on my Facebook page. And there's a website that you can go and look and find more out about it. I need all the help in the world. So if anybody has any inclination to help whatsoever, even if that's just an hour ringing or researching tree blogs or something like that, if you want to give money, you can do that. If you want to come on holiday, that would be great. And I'm also doing some interviews where I'm interviewing experts. I'm going to put that on iTunes, trying to, really advertise this, because I've never been so sure that I'm supposed to do something. And I'm just thrilled that this is what they gave me. And very often, I've spent the last 7 years going, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? You gave me all these talents. What am I supposed to do? And, of course, it wasn't until the end of last year when I really looked at the trauma and I really dealt with it, so suddenly they're giving me the project, you know. So I feel like I've earned it, and I have to get over my fear of everything and get completely outside my comfort zone. But I'm also super excited about it. So thank you for letting me have a bit of airspace to talk about it. And if anybody wants to help, please get in touch.
Well, I think that one point that can be made here is that we need to leave things better than we have found them at every level. And certainly in taking care of our planet and with concern for our children and our grandchildren, the lives that are yet to come, we need to wake up to taking care of our planet. And this sounds like a wonderful opportunity for people to give. And I believe there's a spiritual law connected to giving, and that is the more you give, the more you will get back. So,
yeah.
Folks, if you want to help out with this, please contact Carolyn through her website or her Facebook page. And, Carolyn, we've come to the end of the hour. It just went so quickly, and there are things that I want to explore. I want to explore giving and receiving, reincarnation, the art of allowing. I want to talk about your book, Where Is My Man? So I'm definitely going to have you back.
Thank you very kindly. Well, it's been fun to be on. And, you're very welcome to come on my show anytime if you'd like to.
Okay. I would love to do that. And please give me a call at 4:30 my time, which is in 2 minutes. So for now, we're going to come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.